Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360. On May 8th, 2015, voted best local radio show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're definitely looking for a repeat. We want to thank everyone that voted for us. We don't have the results yet, but we'll find out shortly. Please watch out for those results with us. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help their businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the city of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit their website at manhattanbeachchamber.com, or call 310-545-5313. That's 310-545-5313. You can read all about our mini adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am doing well this morning. Joe, how are you?
Wonderful, great. We had a very cleansing rain, snow in the local mountains.
We did. We don't have to worry about our lawns going brown just quite yet after
not
that rain
yet.
Last night.
That's
yeah,
right.
That was great.
It was wonderful, and it's so clean and fresh outside. It's going to be a great weekend, and maybe time for a bike ride.
Maybe.
I don't know, but we have the professionals in the house. Jackie, who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are Carrie Alpert and Steve Whitsitt of South Bay Wheelmen and Manhattan Beach Grand Prix board members. Carrie Alpert served on the board of South Bay Wheelmen starting in 2004 and was president from 2008 to 2011. He raced the Chevron Manhattan Grand Prix multiple times during the 2000s since moving back to Southern California from Texas in 1999. Carrie worked for GTE Verizon for 32 years, retiring in 2003, and spent his entire career in information management and technology. He is married, has three children, a daughter who resides in Houston, and two boys attending elementary and middle school in Redondo Beach. Carrie is proud to be working for the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix and would like to thank Chevron and Manhattan Beach for their incredible support in helping the race reach its 54th running this year. He would also like to point out the contributions of Ted Ernst, a member of the Cycling Hall of Fame, who has been working for the race every one of its 54 years. Now, Steve Whitsitt is the current president of the South Bay Wheelmen Foundation, which is a 501c3 charitable supporter of amateur cycling in the U.S. and abroad, and the organization which puts on the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix. Steve raced as an amateur for 15 years in U.S. Cycling Association races, winning numerous California state road and track championships, as well as placing in national championships. Steve has raced the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix many times, including many podium finishes. He is a retired engineer and 35-year resident of Manhattan Beach. So as you mentioned, Joe, this morning we'll be talking about the 54th annual Manhattan Beach Grand Prix, which is, by the way, the second oldest one-day bike race in the country, and it takes place Sunday, June 7th. Carrie, Steve, welcome to the program. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Jackie.
It's great being here.
Thank you for being here. It's quite an honor to really discuss this because we're talking about something that's got, you know, national. I would say the top 10 one day bike races have something very, very important to offer to the rest of the country to talk about them. When did this start, Carrie? When was the beginning of the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix?
Well, I believe the first race was 1962, which is long before I became involved with it. But as I said in my little bio, that Ted Ernst, who founded the South Bay Wheel, and then also founded the race.
Right.
And he's worked every year since 1962 at the race and for the club.
Wow. Wow. That's quite a legacy. Wow.
Yeah, I might just also add that besides being the second oldest one-day race in the country, it's the oldest race that's been run on the same course every year of its existence.
Okay.
And I was just going to say the race is the exact same age as me.
Okay.
I was born in 62 too.
And one other thing, Ted is also, this is Steve, has been instrumental in bringing amateur and professional cycling to the United States. He's got a very colorful career as a both an amateur and a professional rider in
right.
the U.S. and in Europe.
Right.
Born in Chicago, where the cycling scene was quite hot back in the 30s, 40s. They had tremendous velodromes and races. And, it's interesting that tradition has kept on in Europe, but it's been backed off quite a bit in the United States because I think of the advent of the car and the
mm-hmm.
economy.
Mm-hmm.
But Ted has been very instrumental in that.
Now, Steve, describe the velodrome for people that, and I'm not really sure exactly what we're talking about here, but describe that and the kinds of races that we were talking about in the 30s, 40s, and so forth.
One of the really popular races back in the time when they had, these dance to a drop kind of events in the 20s and 30s.
Yes.
They had what's called, and they still do have what's called a six-day race, which back then you would race for 24 hours with a partner. And if you did it a certain you slept while your partner continued to race around the velodrome. The velodrome being a track that's either outdoors or indoors. Back then it was mostly indoors. In large facilities, anywhere from a couple of hundred meters long to 600 meters long. And they would ride around and as a team, and they would count the laps, and whoever had the most laps at the end of that six-day period would be the winner. That tradition is kept on in Europe. They've backed off of the 24 hours continuous. The riders now race for about 8 hours.
Right.
And then they have a good night's sleep and then return to do it again over the course of 6 days. And it's immensely popular
wow.
in Europe. They have large crowds. They have beer fests going on the sidelines. And it's quite a tradition. But that was a cycling scene, that and road racing back in the U.S., back in that time period that Ted was beginning as an amateur and then became a professional and went to Europe and did six-day races there as well.
Yeah, I think that, these events like Stagecoach and these like 3-day concerts are really becoming much, much more popular. I think young people today would be ready to embrace something like the velodrome. They're looking for exciting events that involve physical endurance and so forth that I think that they would be ready for it again.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And there's also because the velodrome is a very small facility relative to the many miles you can travel out on the road. Moms and dads can bring their young kids who to learn how to ride and sit in the stands while they're being trained. And we do that now and pick up the sport there in a very controlled and professional and managed facility.
Right. Exciting stuff. And also, it's exciting to think that we have these organizations that are supporting biking and racing in the South Bay. I want to talk a little bit about the history of the South Bay Wheelmen. Steve, if you could give us an idea of when that began, I guess around the same time as the Grand Prix. The South Bay Wheelmen, has it always been a charitable organization like it is today?
No, it was. It started out originally as a club, and it still continues. South Bay Wheelmen is a separate organization from the South Bay Wheelmen Foundation, and I'll describe how that came about. Mm-hmm. The Ted started the South Bay Wheelmen back in 61, mm-hmm. at the race the next year in 62, as Kerry mentioned. And then about in the, I would say about 10 years ago, we began to notice that there were donors that would want to support some specific individuals who were doing quite well and couldn't afford the expense of doing long-distance travel for international or national events. We would kick in, some of the individuals kick in some money, and we came to find that the IRS has a section 501(c), which allows charitable donations for organizations that support national, international, amateur cycling. Mm. And so a few years ago, we set up a separate foundation, and we collect donations from individuals and from companies, and we support things like programs for youths to learn how to ride on the velodrome, or even master riders, older riders. It's a very thriving activity. We can talk a little bit more about that worldwide. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very effective way of allowing someone to put some donations into this sort of development, which I think helps everyone, because as you mentioned, the more we see cycling coming back in the U.S. because of the pressure of the roads, needing to get more riders on the roads. These skills that they develop, even if they don't race a whole lot, they still develop the skills that allow them to be very comfortable on the road and deal with automobiles and so forth.
Right.
So it's
right.
Sort of a win-win having the foundation. The foundation is separate from the club. It's I run the foundation, and the club has its own organizations. We keep the two separate. We can make charitable donations to. We can make donations to other kinds of organizations, or racing organizations, mm-hmm. like the Velodromes or other issues.
This is a big event, Kerry. It's very, very, very well attended and very well watched in the cycling community. I know we talked about it being the oldest on the same course. How would you rate this event in terms of the cycling events that occur throughout the cycling season, Kerry?
Well, it's certainly, and I think Steve would agree with this, it's certainly one of the toughest courses in Southern California. It's a demanding course. It runs along Valley Ardmore in Manhattan Beach, and it has some elevation changes. It has two very sharp turns at either end of the course that do a complete 180 degree turn, mm-hmm. and it's because of the elevation changes in it. And its length, it proves to be very demanding as a race. The races, which are done on time, not distance, through the racing day, the races don't tend to be very many laps, but they're very difficult because of, as I said, the course elevation changes.
Well, now that's key. You say it's not about distance, it's about time. Take us inside a little bit. How is this scored? I mean, you're a racer. I assume you can race, then you can rest, and then you can race, and then you can rest. But you have to time your rests, or how does that work?
Well, the races such as the Chevron Manhattan Beach Grand Prix. Let's say a typical race might be during the day 40 minutes to 50 minutes in length. The pro women go for an hour, and the pro men go for 90 minutes. But the lower category races may be 40 to 50 minutes in length. And from start to finish, you're going the whole 40 to 50 minutes. And there's no stopping, and the scoring is, as in most athletic events, first, second, third, to make the podium, and then, and then so on through the field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are races throughout the day. How many individual heats, or I'm not sure what you even call them, throughout the day?
I believe Steve can correct me. Yeah, I think we have eight. What?
This year, nine races. We've added one to the number that we had last year.
Okay.
We might want to say something about what those races entail. There's two kinds of racing in amateur cycling in the United States. There are category races, in which all the riders who are in the USA Cycling, which they have to be in the race, are categorized as to their skill and experience, categories 1 through 4, we actually go to a level 5, but we don't have a race for 5. And then age group. So you get a mix of both people who are, say, in their 50s and would like to continue racing against people that are their own age, which is a much much more enjoyable environment.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might have the professionals who are in there, all Category 1, which is the top category for amateur cycling in the U.S. And those eight races consist of very different cuts of that. It masters 55, 60, starts out in the women, 3/4 categories, and so on through the day.
Mm. Okay. Is there
an open?
The open are the categorized. In other words, to have a license to be able to race, you have to be categorized as to what your skill level and experience is.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
All right. So this is interesting. We have professional racers coming to Manhattan Beach that are going to be participating. Are there names that we would know, or is this circuit, the Grand Prix cycling circuit, how big is it around the country? I mean, how many races a year would a typical professional Grand Prix cyclist participate in?
For the professionals, there are several different kinds of races going on nationwide. This one is part of what is called the National Criterion Challenge, NCC, and then there's a National Road Challenge, NRC, and these professionals compete in this dozen or so events in each of those categories, each of those divisions, around the country, and if you win, the prize money is around $3,000 for first place, to pick up some good change, plus good exposure for their sponsors at this level. So they garner points, and they get wins at each of these races. And then at the end of the season, whoever wins the first place by having the greatest number of points also wins an additional bonus. And we attract racers from literally around the country, and occasionally from foreign countries. Racers will drop in, particularly those in the West.
Right. This is very similar. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about auto racing or something of that nature, the prize purses are larger, but still, even with that, a lot of those racers depend on their sponsorship and other financial aid. They don't just depend on the prize money. They depend on,
yes,
on representing companies and so
on. Right. Exactly.
Right. And I'm assuming it's exactly the same in cycling, that someone's going to get a call from Schwinn or one of the other big manufacturers, and they're going to want them to be represented. Tell us, this is our first experience. I've seen the race before, but I didn't really know about the internal organization. Do you guys solicit volunteers for the day of?
Yes. I just happened to run the volunteers the day of the race. We have some 115 or so volunteers scattered around doing various things. One of the most important jobs is to be course marshals, so they're posted at different places along the course. And the course is about 1.5 miles around the loop that Carrie described, to whistle and warn pedestrians, for instance, if the field is coming through, and also to help the Manhattan Beach Police Department is terrific in this regard, guard some of the cross streets so that no one tries to get onto the course except in one specific area where there's a cul-de-sac. There's no way for them to get out their cars out unless we help them.
Right.
And we have a special procedure for when we do that.
Right.
So there are all kinds of volunteers doing various things, selling T-shirts, helping with the kids' races. Ted runs that as well at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk more about that in a minute.
Absolutely, and we will talk more about that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show. We're talking the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix, and that's going to be very exciting on Sunday, June 7th. Coming up, it's the 54th annual Manhattan Beach Grand Prix, and as you've learned, it's one of the oldest in the country, and perhaps the oldest on the same course continuously. So this is exciting stuff. We're going to be back. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to have your question or comment. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. And we'd also like to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, Certified Public Accountants and Consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
All right. So we left off talking about the structure of the race and sort of the management of the race, the volunteers and so forth. What are some of the other sort of technical aspects of running a race like this, organizing a race like this? Is there a national association of cycling that this race is sanctioned by, Kerry?
Yes. USA Cycling is the overall national organization for bicycle racing in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they have, as Steve was discussing earlier, they oversee issuing licenses to racers in the different categories, moving those racers up through different categories as they improve and win races. They also issue licenses and insurance to organizations such as the South Bay Wheelmen to put on races. And throughout the whole country.
Right, right. Of course, insurance would be a key advantage of having a national organization provide direction on that. And this, Steve, this is a big deal. That whole day is going to be taken up with the race. Can you just give us an idea of the course? Exactly that the race will run.
Yeah, where is the course exactly?
The start finish line is right in front of Live Oak Park in Manhattan Beach near the ball fields. You can see a permanent white stripe across the road at that point. And that's the finish line, and the race proceeds in a clockwise direction down at that start-finish line down to Pacific, up at the little hill, and to Pacific, and then they make two right turns. We call that turn one and two on Pacific to go immediately on to Ardmore, which is a road that sits above, both sides of the chips, the green belt. And it comes back on Ardmore and climbs a long hill up to the top around 18th Street and starts downhill into the final turns, 3 and 4, which is where 15th Street, 15th Street crosses Ardmore and Valley. And they make a big sweeping right-hand turn, and they've got about 300 meters to sprint to the finish.
Mm.
And they do that over and over. And you also notice, if you're watching the race, you'll see your pace car out in front. It maintains a separation and is there to help warn officials and others that if the peloton is coming, and if there's something that happens on the course, like some pedestrian happens to get out on the course, they also radio back to tell them that. Then the peloton comes through, and you may hear whistles from the volunteers to warn everyone that the peloton is coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there'll be a motorcycle rider who's following the peloton to indicate where the end of the peloton is, so that if people need to cross the street, they can do that. But it takes a couple of minutes for the peloton to make it around, at least 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And stragglers usually are, if they're not competitive, they're usually pulled from the race. If they're very far behind, there's no chance they're going to be making it up.
Ooh.
So you see a pretty tight group of cyclists riding around at very high speeds. And it's kind of fun, especially in the pro race, just to walk around the course and observe what happens at different points in the course, especially pro men and women, turn one, two, where they make those two right turns. It's amazing how fast they go by and how they lean in. You don't want to lean out too far if you're on the sidewalk, because their body's over the curb to make that turn, a tight, fast turn. And they do that for an hour and a half, and it gets to pro men.
That is amazing. I can't wait. This year, we're definitely going to be attending, my wife and I. And
We were invited to the Chevron Hospitality Tent, one of their sponsors.
Of course.
Yeah, when Jill calls, you answer.
That's right. That's right.
If you go on our website, mbgp.com, mbgp.com, there are also some videos of the race last year underneath the race menu. And you might find exciting, particularly some of the GoPro video that were taken by some of the top racers in the pro race. And it's a hair-raising experience to see what the top racers experienced near the end of the race when they're sprinting to win.
Wow. That's exciting. And
it's exciting not just for the racers. It's exciting for the people there watching it, because it's right there. It's like when you see on TV the Tour de France. You know, all the people are just lined up there on the sides of the street and the roads, and it's right there. You're not separated from it, you know, like in car racing with walls and chain link fence, you know, or you know, the horse races, you know, and all that stuff. Yeah, you're right there.
Yes, I totally agree with you. It's one of the magical things about bicycle racing, that the spectators can be within inches of the athletes as they circle the course or on a road course, you know, as they go by.
Right. Wonderful. Repeat that. It's M for Manhattan Beach Grand Prix.com. It's very easy.
Yes.
And you can get all the information there. And you're still, are you still soliciting for volunteers?
Oh, yes. It's going to be particularly challenging because we've added a race. And also, USAC has added drug testing, which we performed first last year. In that case, they took the top three finishers from the men and women's pro race and drug tested them, but they could test anybody. It's one of the things you need to do if you're asked to, if you're registered to race.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, yeah, we're looking for both volunteers and sponsors. So we still got some sponsor slots available.
Okay. We've got some sponsorships slots available. Of course, the top sponsors, Chevron, Janelle Holden DDS, and then the Manhattan Beach Marriott Hotel. Excellent. The Manhattan Beach Marriott, the official race hotel. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And Hermosa Cycling has also come on board. Hermosa Cycling.
Okay, and Hermosa Cycling. Yeah.
Well, all these cyclists need some place to sleep after the race, Jeff.
Yes, they do.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And maybe play a round of nine-hole golf.
Yeah, maybe, if they're not too tired.
No.
I have to ask, I got to get a little sensationalism in here, because, as I said, we see it on TV. Does the crowd ever accidentally become part of the race? We see it on TV, on the big races, where some people accidentally get in the way, or sometimes on purpose.
Or they lean in too far and try to take a picture. That's a famous incident. Another incident on Armstrong, that is handlebars hooked by a woman who's carrying a plastic bag.
Ooh.
But we've been pretty fortunate. We've never had, and I can recall, a major incident like that involving a spectator. We had some crashes, of course.
You do have crashes?
Yeah. Crashes, yes. And so we have, as required by USA Cycling and all of the sanction devices that we have an ambulance standing by. We're really hooked in with the fire department and the police with regards to how the procedures for dealing with something like that might happen. They're just terrific in their response. But that does happen, so we're ready for it.
I wonder, is Manhattan Beach CERC going to be out there doing their thing? The Manhattan Beach CERC Association? Because don't they normally... Joe, don't they normally attend a lot of these bigger events?
They have, yeah.
I wonder if they're going to be at it.
I don't know. Have you guys connected with the CERT organization, Community Emergency Response Team Association?
Well, I'm sure they're involved in some capacity with respect to fire and the emergency response teams that we have.
Right.
With the police. I think they are. I'm just not familiar with the nomenclature.
Yeah, they're volunteers as actually attached to the fire department. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
This is amazing. How many? Give us a sense of previous races. How many spectators can you estimate have come out for previous races before? Do you have any idea?
We tend to estimate the crowd at around, generally each year, at around 10,000 people throughout the day, because racing starts at 7 a.m., and this year the pro race will end at 2:30, Steve?
3:20. Oh, the pro race is in the middle of the day this year. We changed that.
Oh, that's right.
So the women's race will be at 11 a.m., and then the men's will be at starts at 12:05 sharp. And that'll give us, so we think, an opportunity for more people to enjoy the pro race, because it tends to peak in the middle of the day.
Right.
The crowd interest, and it can have that sooner. And the kids race at the very end, when all the big boys and girls have raced the clear the course, and the kids have their race that Ted runs at 3:35.
Right.
Just on that.
Is the kids race, is that mostly local kids, or do you get kids coming from outside the area to, like, future professional racers that want to get in on the kids race?
We get some from other states.
Yeah. Right. So people specifically come here for that, for the kids.
Yeah, it's ages. I think it's 4 to 14, I believe, or 6 to 14. You can look at, you see that also on the website. It describes that. It's very short. We would make a couple hundred meters at the most for the youngest kids.
Right.
And we back up to close to the end of the straightaway for the older kids. Everybody gets a medal. Everybody has a fun time watching little kids in their tricycles. Bumping down there and wandering around the course, and people screaming in front of them to keep pushing ahead. And I suspect some of the races have. We've had a number of racers that have done these races that have gone on to be very big races. In fact, I guess if you don't mind, I'd like to back up on with respect to the foundation. When we set that up, one of the racers that we had Sarah Hammer, her father, Cliff Hammer, is a big-time member of the South Bay Women. We sponsored her 1 year, South Bay Women, and she went into the World Championships, and she won. And since then, she's become the six-time world champion in her specialties. There are three different specialties and holds a world record. And won two silver medals in the Olympics.
What?
So, wow.
From,
yeah.
And where is she from?
Her family lives in Temescal. She's married now and lives in several places.
Okay.
I guess she's back here now, but getting ready for maybe the next Olympics. I'm not sure. I think she's going to be riding in the 2016.
Right.
So, little kids like them, they're older races, they can recall her shipping numbers, cards that show how many laps there are to go when she was a little kid.
Wow.
That's a particularly interesting story, but there's been others that have gone on to do quite well, also internationally.
Right, right. Very, very, well, it's the South Bay. We often talk about the great things that happen here and the great things that come from the South Bay, and this is just one of them. The 54th annual Chevron Manhattan Beach Grand Prix coming this June 7th, ladies and gentlemen. You do not want to miss this event. If you love cycling, this is a spectacular event to participate in, and you do not have to go, you know, 50 miles or who knows how far or to another state to experience it. It's right here in Manhattan Beach. That's amazing. That's just amazing.
We got it all. We do. We really do.
We do. They even do Formula One racing in Long Beach. We've got it all within a certain radius. But
yeah,
this
that's
is
right.
Grand Prix racing right here, cycling in Manhattan Beach. Yes, Steve?
Yeah, it is amazing that we've got so much going on here. And I interviewed for jobs back in the 70s. When I saw this environment, I said, this is the only place I want to live. And so I've been long-term resident in Manhattan Beach, and I think we've got it all here, as you can see from the growth.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You come here once, and you never want to leave.
Absolutely.
You fall into the South Bay, whether you're visiting a friend or you get invited to something, you're going to an event or a new restaurant, you get down here, and it's like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
Yeah, exactly. You can't say too much about how much how big a part of the Chevron and Manhattan Beach city without their participation in this, we just couldn't do it. So they really are top-notch supporters of this activity.
Well, we have met many organizations that would like to echo that. The support that Chevron gives to the local community is just it's unmatched, and it's irreplaceable. They really do support lots of local events, and of course they live here too. So they love being a part of the community because they are.
Yep.
And Jackie, is it that time yet?
It is that time.
All right. Let's do another station break, Jackie.
This portion of the program is brought to you by Shade Hotel, nestled in the heart of downtown Manhattan Beach and steps away from the Pacific Ocean. Shade Hotel offers a unique seaside experience. With its stylish decor, casual beach vibe, and personalized service, Shade provides the perfect setting to unwind. Guests will enjoy Zinc's award-winning cuisine prepared by executive chef Chris Garasik and signature handcrafted cocktails. A short stroll away from the hotel, guests will find boutique shopping, a vibrant nightlife, and an array of beach-centric activities. Shade's individual spaces are designed with the flexibility to hold a variety of functions, such as weddings, business meetings, fundraisers, and more. Whether your next event is hosted in the signature courtyard, on Zinc Terrace, or atop the beautiful sky deck, Shade has a space for every occasion. There's a reason Condé Nast Traveler listed Shade as one of the top 100 hotels in the world and the number 6 reason to visit Los Angeles. It's cooler in Shade. For more information and to book your reservation, visit www.shadehotel.com or call 310-546-4100. 4995. Shade Hotel is located at 1221 North Valley Drive in Manhattan Beach. And by the way, I just wanted to mention, in that commercial spot, we mentioned, you know, in the area, you'll find great boutique shopping. Last night, I attended the grand opening of Yorktown, which is a new retail shop, home decor, gifts. It's brought to us by Maureen McBride, who owns Tabula Rasa, which has been around for 15 years. Everybody knows it. It's a great store. She just opened her second retail location, Yorktown. Everybody has got to go in and check this place out. She's got beautiful merchandise in there. Mm, mm. It's a great addition to the neighborhood.
Yorktown, where is it?
It's at 919E Manhattan Avenue. It's do you remember where Circa used to be?
Sure.
Okay. Circa was is now called the Arthur J. Mm. The Sims Group has taken over that space, and the Arthur J. is about to open. It's not open yet. It's about to open, and it's going to be a steakhouse, like a classic steakhouse. Anyway, they're right across the street from there.
Okay.
You can't miss it. She's got a lovely blue and white striped awning, and it's a great shop, so go check it out.
Okay. There you go. Now we know where to go. This is.
I always tell everybody where to go. You want to hear something funny? Just a little sidebar here. I attended an event Wednesday night, and I was there with my photographer Gloria Placentia, and Gloria got there early, and she got seats in the front row because she wanted to take photographs. So she had saved me a seat, and when I sat down, there was a woman sitting next to me, and as I went to sit down, she said, "You're South Bay by Jackie." Mm-hmm. I said, "Yes." I said, "Where do I know you from?" She said, "You don't. I just do everything you tell me to."
Oh.
and it gets better. I ran into her last night at the grand opening of Yorktown. She wasn't kidding.
She was following you. Yeah.
She was there. Yeah.
There's so many exciting things to do. We're thrilled to talk about the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix, and I'm looking now. I'm looking at the website. I'm looking at the overview, and at the bottom, there's a blurb there about Ted Ernst. Ted is 84 years young, still very active as a mentor in the racing community, and overseeing the youth races, the kid races. I guess he'll be out there this year, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you want to meet a guy who's been sort of supporting the banner of local cycling since 1962, you can meet Ted Ernst June 7th right here in Manhattan Beach. And you can tell him we sent you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's one thing. It may be obvious, but I just have to say it. Cycling, bicycling, is something you can do from the time you're knee high, for as long as you live. It's one of those activities, sports, however you want to phrase it, that you can. It's not like football where it's going to wear you down and mess you up, and you have to give it up in your 30s. You know what I mean? It's something that everybody can do. Families can do it. Friends can do it in a group, do it individually.
Sure.
It's for everyone.
Sure.
You know, that people, you know, in their 50s, 60s, 70s can still get out and race.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It is wonderful. When you think of the state of cycling as a sport, Steve, I'll go to you first. How do you view it? Are you happy? Are there some areas that you'd like to see improved? Are there laws and sort of regulations that need to be addressed by cities, counties, and towns? What's the state of cycling today, Steve?
I'd say different than the racing community. Everything is pretty well organized all the way up to worldwide. But it's quite an infrastructure. There's really nothing like it in other sports that probably don't have as much money behind them because of the equipment. USAC uses UCI rule, which runs cycling worldwide, and they also run the selection process for the Olympic teams for cycling and for various other disciplines, BMX, cyclocross. So within there, there's some, you know, tweaks that are being made. So I think that's okay. It's the what you got into the relationship between cycling and roads and cities and so forth, how we use that to help us develop a really smart approach to cycling in the future for everyday use for people. And I think while people have different opinions about how that's going to work, I think one of the keys there is women doing more cycling for commuting or whatever. I think that's, they get the kind of respect on the road that maybe men don't get quite as much of. And that would be very important. And we've got a lot of activities from the South Bay Bicycle Coalition helping the city plans for developing roadways. And you can see those coming into action with the Sheros on the Hermosa and the bike path. Of course, you get the greatest bike path I think I've ever seen right outside our door. So I think that's where the action is going to be.
My daughter graduated from UC Davis, and UC Davis is often touted as a bike-friendly city. The standard line when you go to UC Davis, everybody says the same thing. There are more bicycles than people in UC in Davis, California. This is also city planners, urban planners from around the world are also looking at making cities and towns and neighborhoods more bike-friendly, to the point where it's preferred that you use a bike to an auto. Do you think that's the direction for the future? Carrie, I'll throw that to you. Do you think that's the direction to make cities and towns and neighborhoods more bike-friendly than auto-friendly?
Well, I certainly think that it would be greatly beneficial to you know, our air quality, our conservation of fossil fuels, to expand the ability of people to ride and to ride safely. And as Steve was saying, we're seeing more and more bike lanes and lanes with the Sheros in them here in the South Bay, and that's making it much easier for people to use their bikes day in and day out for transportation and recreation.
I don't want to let that go. Sheros as opposed to arrows?
Yes. Along some of the streets here in the South Bay, you'll now see it's a chevron-shaped arrowhead with a bicycle rider. And it's to designate lanes where bicyclists can take the whole lane safely, and so that they can move more safely through the whole area.
Right.
Yeah, they have those in Hermosa, the right lane on what street is it?
I think it's Hermosa Avenue.
Hermosa Avenue.
Yes,
yeah,
on Hermosa Avenue.
Right. So bicyclists have the right to use the right lane.
The entire lane, and they're not limited to a bike lane or anything
right.
like that. Yeah.
Right. Sheros. I never heard that before. That's interesting.
Sheros.
We have them also in Manhattan Beach as well, in downtown Manhattan, between roughly, I think, 9th and 15th. You'll see Sheros, even though it's only one lane, and that's intended to make people aware that cyclists may be using that roadway. It doesn't have a legal force, but that's the purpose of the Sheros, to make them aware where there isn't a real bike lane. And there are other places that are real designated bike lanes, like in the south part of Manhattan.
Well, I mean, we do have, I believe, this is a statewide law, the new 3-foot rule. That definitely does have the force of law to it, that if you are in a lane and you're sharing with a bicyclist, you're to give them 3 feet. And, you know, practically, that means you need to move to the left, because it's difficult to give a bicyclist 3 feet if you're in the same lane as they are. But it just means watch out and give them some space, because so many cyclists have been injured and injured grievously by automobiles just not paying attention. And I believe that's a state law. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is a state law.
Right. So
let's talk about, I don't know if you guys are as excited as I am about the new bike path on Harbor Drive. I was out there last Sunday. My husband and I went for a bike ride, and the blacktop is down.
Yeah.
Blacktop is down.
Yes, it is.
Yes. The signs are up, bike path closed, but everybody's using it anyway. the week before that, we were out at, you know, driving on Harbor Drive. You're taking your life in your hands. So I am so excited about that bike path. I can't even tell you.
Yes, it's really going to help connect the Strand bike, the bike Strand with the Redondo Harbor area, and
right.
make it much safer for people.
Right.
And I saw the other day that they're scheduling the ribbon cutting for June 13th.
Yes, yes, yes. I just posted that information on my website with a small illustration of what that little parquet is going to look like. How ridiculous was it when you would get to the southern end of Hermosa Beach and you'd have to make that sharp left? You know, you came to a wall.
Wow.
You know, and,
right.
and in Hermosa, you know, it's not just cyclists. You've got bikes. You've got people walking. You've got people on skateboards. You've got baby strollers. You know, it's all everybody is sharing the Strand in Hermosa, as opposed to Manhattan, where they have a separate bike lane and another area for people to walk. So now it's just going to be way easier to make that transition out of Hermosa into Redondo. And I cannot wait for the rest of the, you know, harbor development, you know, to, you know, continue it, you know, once that parking structure comes down, you know, they're going to have a bike lane through, you know, the new Shade Hotel, you know, they're going to connect it all. It's going to be great.
There you go.
Yeah. Didn't the Beach Cities Bike Coalition, didn't they have some input into
this? Oh,
yes.
They were instrumental in doing that, and Jim Hammond and others in doing that. And great city staff work by Redondo Beach. So it was a nice solution for, like you said, a problem that's been there for a long time.
Right.
It's exciting. There's exciting stuff happening.
We're excited. We have plenty of time left. Carrie, is there something that we haven't covered regarding either the Wheelman or the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix that you'd like to get out there?
Well, I just like to I'd like to thank you guys for having us on the show today, because this has been great. But I'd also like to again thank Chevron. Their support of the race and of the South Bay Wheelman Club and the foundation has been incredible. And I'd like to thank Dr. Holden, who's Dr. Holden sponsors the kids races, mm-hmm. and all the other sponsors of the race, because without the sponsors, it just wouldn't happen at all.
Go ahead. You got their names. You got a list of them. You want to thank them? Let's give them some props here.
Well, we have Chevron, of course, Dr. Holden,
right.
The Marriott Hotel,
right.
Hermosa Cyclery this year has come on board. Steve?
Yeah, we're getting some support from SRAM for the what's called the wheel pit, where the cyclists during the race, if they have a puncture or a mechanical problem or something, they can just pull over and either get it fixed or swap bikes and get back into the race. There's a one-lap rule, which allows them to take a lap and wait for the peloton to come back by if it's not too close to the end of the race.
Mm-hmm.
We also are looking for additional sponsors as well. We have some sponsorship slots available, some races that can buy the race and get their name on the finish line trust that we have going over the course and on the website, and links to their businesses as well. And we're also still trying to close a deal with a car sponsor for the pace car itself.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of opportunities, we think, for sponsorship there.
Excellent.
Go talk to Al at Manhattan Toyota. Okay.
Yeah.
Al was at Manhattan Toyota. They do a lot in the community.
Yeah. Is SRAM, is that a national organization?
It's a have you ever heard of Shimano or Campagnolo? They make bicycle equipment, what's called Grupos or Groups, the drivetrain of years. And SRAM is one that's been has come on really strong in the last 5 or 10 years and very popular among the pros.
Wow.
So they've been real big this year. In the past, it's been Shimano. This year, it's SRAM.
Very a very impressive website, SRAM, just like it sounds, SRAM.com.
Yes.
Impressive. Well, this is because the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix is impressive. 54th annual Chevron Manhattan Beach Grand Prix this 7th of June. Looking forward to it very, very much, and looking forward to the whole day. There will be, I assume there will be other activities for people if they're going to come out and be spectators. Let's talk a little bit about that. How is the race look for spectators? Is there going to be food booths and other kinds of entertainment, or what's going on there?
There are food booths down the center between Valley and Ardmore. There'll be food booths and other vendors set up in that area. Mm-hmm. We're also going to have an antique bike show over on the baseball field across the street, which will be very interesting. Ted helps put that on as well.
Right.
He belongs to an antique cycling association. And
that's the first I've heard of that. That sounds interesting. And do they do that every year?
We've been doing it the last few years, yes.
Oh, okay. See?
The exhibit link for the, on the menu, exhibits and food, you'll see what we did for last year, and most of those venues will be back, but it's got a couple of interesting photos of the vintage bike show, so you get an idea of what kinds of things you see there. They're very passionate about their older bikes, and so there are a lot of people that are also passionate about old bike equipment that's
You know something we didn't touch on is the evolution of bikes, because on the Strand you see so many different types of. I guess they fall into the bicycle category. They have a couple of wheels, but some people are standing, some people are sitting, like reclining. Some people are going side to side. You know, one of them looks like almost like a Stairmaster. And of course the electric bikes.
Jackie, you're reading my mind. I think there's an electric bike company in El Segundo that would make a perfect sponsor.
There you go.
Bring the concept of electric bikes into the fore. They could be an excellent sponsor.
LA Electric Bikes.
LA Electric Bikes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating, gentlemen. Kerry Alpert and Steve Whitsitt. This is a fascinating journey into a local event that has a 54-year history. It's just amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's exciting. We're thrilled to have you, and we want everyone to go to mbgp.com. Whether you're a volunteer or potentially a sponsor, please go to mbgp.com, and that's the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next Tuesday for Preparing for Disaster in America. Bye-bye now.